Cap and Jay Hood. Mornings.
ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
9 o'clock in Chicago. Sports are back. That scene yesterday was just awesome with Mickelson on 18. The White Sox had a rough weekend, but they were on the big stage in New York. NHL playoffs were sensational from Friday on, as were the NBA playoffs. And then we put the cherry on top of the sundae last night when Javi Baez, two-run bomb off Alex Reyes to dead center up onto that grass berm, 417 feet, exit velocity of 106.7, and the Cubs walk away with a 2-1 win and a series win over the Redbirds. Jesse Rogers is fueled by the Pride Stores, not your typical convenience store. Check out one of their 15 Chicagoland locations today. Jesse, good morning. Eric Backus, the home plate umpire. That guy's got to be disciplined. He was awful yesterday.
Yeah, really affected the game. I mean, for both teams, it seemed like for the Cubs a little bit more. Wainwright, was using the knowledge that he was going to get that outside pitch and went out there often. So interesting, Cap, listening to David Ross after the game, because, you know, they have all these stats on these umpires. And Backus calls the fourth most strikes outside the zone of anyone in the league. So as soon as he saw him doing that early in the game, Ross got on him and eventually, of course, got ejected. He knew between Wainwright and Molina, they would take advantage. This is a rookie ump. They would take advantage of him if he started the game calling that wide zone, which, again, Ross knew he might based on previous, you know, knowledge and data. So I thought it was really cool of David Ross to be on top of that and try to nip it in the bud. I don't think it worked. Wainwright had 31 called strikes, the most, tied with Kyle Hendricks, of any pitcher in baseball in a start this season. So it was wide. It was also wide in favor of the Cubs as well. They had a few pitches outside, even in the ninth inning, I think, with Kimbrel. So it just wasn't a good zone, but I think it affected the Cubs more because Wainwright knew how to use it, especially with Molina behind the plate.
So, Jesse, I think it begs the question, which Cubs are going to step up? Was it the game one Cubs against the Cardinals or the last two? The last two seemingly is more Cubs as far as trying to find offense, sometimes win, sometimes lose. So how do you characterize the Cubs at this point?
Well, look, they've played the most one-run games in the league now, 18. They're 9-9 in them. So there's some good, there's some bad. They're, what, a couple games above 500? That kind of tells you what you need to know. They're hanging in there, but they're certainly looking better this month than they did in April on offense. I think we all agree, since Duffy and certainly Nico Horner was inserted in the lineup, Duffy's hurting a little bit, and when Mariznick was in there, you know, it's changed the offense. That looks a little bit more consistent, Jay Hood. Now, it's not going to be great every night. The Cardinals certainly in the rotation can pitch. Wainwright can pitch, and when an umpire gives you that big zone, it's going to affect you. But I'm more concerned about the pitching staff. If you're thinking about a great season for the Cubs, can this rotation and this young bullpen last into September, maybe even into October? I'm not sure that they can. I'll give you an example, again, why this debate about trade or not trade come July is going to really increase. Yesterday before the game, Tommy Hotovy was talking about how they may have to back off Azalea a little bit. Not a shock, right? Young guy, didn't really pitch much last year. They may have to do that at some point. Now, he's a key cog right now. He's pitching great. But if they have to back off a little bit, skip a start, whatever the case may be, that affects how this thing's going to go down the line. Same with these young relievers who are great, the Keegan Thompsons and Tommy Nance. They didn't pitch last year. You have to be able to project them into September, into October. And that's where we get back to that question, like what's going to happen in July? I still think the default position is to sell. And the funny part is you've been waiting for this offense to come to life a little bit these last few years and find some consistency, and it has. Now I still feel like it's a little wonky on the mound, Jay Hood. So it's a good team. It just may not be a great, great team, and that's the decision that Jed has to sort of navigate around.
So I'm most impressed by what Tommy Hotovy and the bullpen have been able to do yesterday. It's, let's see, Chance to
Tapera was in there.
Brian Tapera looks amazing. In fact, during the Tapera appearance, Matt Vasgersian said, okay, this isn't the same bullpen we watched 6 weeks ago. And then you see Kimbrel come in, got his second plate appearance as a hitter his career. But all those guys together, Dan Winkler, these guys have really stepped up. Why?
They have changed things. The development has changed. Craig Breslow is in charge of their pitching. Basically, it feels like since they started up at that alternate site last year, they have done a good job of developing, finally, their pitchers. Now, they're not going to hit on all of them, but my God, Keegan Thompson looks great. Tommy Nance was an independent ball. Ryan Tapero didn't have much of a resume. He looks good. Now, again, I'm not thinking about this year, but I'm thinking about the next few. You really might have a foundation down there in the bullpen, and maybe a couple of them, Keegan Thompson's one, Justin Steele maybe, end up in the starting rotation. So there's a lot of good going on there, Cap. It is, again, a scouting and development success that we haven't seen on the mound with this team in 5 years. So you got to give kudos to Theo as well. They drafted some of these guys, but I think it's the development that's changed over the last couple.
Jesse, Cap and I were talking about trying to figure out, if you are Jed Hoyer, what do you want to do with the Cubs here by the time we get closer to the deadline? So 24 and 22, you mentioned a couple of games over 500. When do you determine if you are the Cubs, whether or not you add or subtract to this team? Because it's not like we haven't seen this before, right? A competitive team falling short in the playoffs.
Right. This is the fascinating aspect of the Cubs, and we've talked about it since spring training. I really think, again, his default position is to sell, but the standings will dictate. The answer to your question is as late as possible, unless someone calls and blows you away, of course. That's a different story. But as late as possible, you make that decision. Here's a great poll question for you guys. Like, if you knew, because you said it before, we've seen this team get to the playoffs, and then if you knew this team was again going to get to the playoffs, but you also knew it was going to fall short in the first or second round, let's say, would you advise Jed to sell in July? Like, is a playoff appearance enough for you? I would say for most Cub fans, the answer is no. Now, remember, that's a lot of excitement this summer if you get to the playoffs. Walk-off homers, all sorts of good things. Maybe you do win a round. But if you knew now you were going to fall short in October at some point, would you sell? I certainly would. Because if you don't, then Chris Bryant, who's having this incredible season, walks for nothing, potentially, unless you re-sign him. Craig Kimbrel walks for nothing unless you re-sign him, right? All these guys that you could bring back a bunch of prospects on, they would walk for nothing, and you wouldn't have a World Series title. So he's going to decide late. I still think he's more likely to sell in some capacity. I've been on record lately saying I think Craig Kimbrel is gone by August 1st, almost no matter what. Now, maybe if they're in first place by 10 games, I'm proven wrong. But one way or another, I think he's going to sell some parts. If they're far enough out of first, he'll sell all of them. That's just my feeling, and I think it's the right move because you'll get a bunch of prospects back and retool this thing pretty quickly.
Well, Cap, you follow the money in that spot, don't you? Because so if you do make the postseason, you will have some home dates. That matters, doesn't it, to have butts in seats that are in the playoffs?
Yes, it does, but I don't that's penny-wise and pound-foolish. Like, if you told me they're going to get knocked out in round one.
Yeah.
Likely.
Sell away.
Well, then I'm doing that in June. Because if I already know what this is, what's the point of me keeping this team around?
There's not much selling that goes on in June. That's why I say if you get the call that blows you away, I would do it. Now, they're not going to sell Chris Bryant in June. But, you know, Craig Kimbrel might get some calls. I mean, closers are so valuable midseason. It's incredible how it flips. In the offseason, you get nothing for Kimbrel. You get a ton for Chris Bryant, you know, in theory. You flip that in July. You get much more for a closer than you would normally for a position player. But as I documented over the weekend, Bryant is a different kind of position player. Jackie Robinson, Johnny Bench, and Chris Bryant are the only three former MVPs to start a game at five different positions in one season. He's already done it. So,
wait a minute. Johnny Bench?
Yeah.
Bench... Catcher, first base, left field.
Played third. I didn't look it up.
I know he played third, left and right, I believe.
Yeah. That must be it. And Jackie Robinson, how about to be in that class? So
And if Chris does it at five games, I think he has one more position he has to start. Maybe it's first base four more times.
Yeah.
He will have be the only guy to ever do that.
So that,
yeah, the only guy to do it, get five starts at five different positions
correct.
In one season. So think yeah. about that. Any team that needs a third baseman, and there's a bunch, they're going to be calling Jed. Now, any team that needs an outfielder or maybe a first baseman, which is kind of rare at the deadline, but if you do, you might call Jed as well. The possibilities are limitless. You went from maybe a couple prospects, B-level, based on what he did last year and all that stuff, to now you might get an A or a prospect or two of them for Chris Bryant. Now, I'm not advocating that if you're in first place by five games. But short of that or three games out, I think it's the white flag. I really do. Remember, again, this is Jed Hoyer on day one of spring training. This is a transition year. His words, not mine. Now, they can make him change his mind. Like, plan A, I believe, is the transition to sell. Plan B is they surprise him and he can't sell because it just wouldn't be prudent.
So what the White Sox, boy, that stunk over the weekend. Being swept by the Yankees. What did that say about the White Sox? What did that say about the Yankees watching that series, Jeff?
You know, I think you guys would agree. It's a nice learning experience for the Sox. It's 2-1-run losses, both in the ninth inning, one aided by a triple play, okay? And then the middle game is Gerrit Cole. They haven't lost two in a row in a month, okay? They lose three in a row. It is a great test. It's a learning experience. But I will say the one thing that worries me again, as I've said all along, elite right-handed pitching, right? Against all righties, they're 17-16. That's it, 17-16. And you face many more righties than lefties. Now we go to elite. I don't have the numbers, but you can imagine, you know, it's going to be tougher against the elite righties. They're lefties. Moncada is a great example. Have to step up, and I love what Moncada's been doing. But I don't put too much stock in it, Jay Hood. I think it's great that they get out of the division and play some of these other teams because, let's face it, the White Sox division is nothing special. They're basically the only team plus run differential. The AL East has four teams like plus 25 or better. So they need to have some battle scars, right, between now and October. So win or lose, I think these are important games for them just to get the experience. I bet they're better against Yankee pitching the next time they face them.
Yeah, I do think that they will come home. Tony said it's going to be hard to look, Tony La Russa, to look at the Cardinals. It's the only team he's never managed a game against. Isn't that crazy?
It is, and he knows Mike Schilt, their manager, really, really well. So
yep.
It's like managing against Matheny a little bit, but I like what he said yesterday. I'm hurting from this sweep. I'm not thinking about the Cardinals at all. I mean, there's a lot of things I actually like about Tony La Russa. There are. I just like the Zoom call. I mean, I'm a reporter, so you have to understand. If a manager's honest, good, bad, ugly, whatever, that's the number one thing I like.
Of course you do, Cap. Yeah. Of course, that's you're going to be your shuffleboard partner pretty soon here. Shocking.
Whatever you know, it takes.
So, yeah. Yeah, you can't lose the pennant, you know. That no one's going to like. But I do like his honesty. And he must be keeping something together if you don't lose two in a row in a month until this past weekend, right?
No question. Jesse, have a great day, okay, man?
You two guys, hey, tonight, Sox Cardinals on ESPN TV. I will be doing the sideline reporting for it. Joe West will tie the record for most games umpired tonight. He'll break it tomorrow. So it should be an interesting day on the South Side tonight.
Warm night, dark suit for Jesse.
Yeah, that's probably true.
And if you hear somebody hassling you, Jesse, it'll be me and my wife up in the stands.
Excellent. Enjoy it. And I expect you to be heckling Joe West. I expect nothing less out of you.
You got it. Have a great day.
All right. Take care.
There he is, Jesse Rogers.
Did you have a hard fall?
My watch said I did because I pounded my hand. Crazy.
But you're standing upright. I'll tell your watch you're fine. You're doing just fine.
I'm okay. Thank you.
Right.
Jesse Rogers is fueled by the Pride Store. It's not your typical convenience store. Check out one of their 15 Chicagoland locations today. Phil Mickelson wins a major at 50.
Listening to Cap and Jay Hood at home is easier than setting your coffee maker.
This picture of domestic happiness is missing something.
Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
What a way to start the day.
Cap and Jay Hood.
On Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
It's 9:20. supposed to be warm today. I think we might get a little rain. Danny, do we have any chance at rain tonight, or does our forecast look dry for the evening? I know Tracy's got some warm weather in the cards, and then like Thursday, Friday, it's back in like 58, 60. Really? Really? Going into Memorial Day weekend, we're back in the 50s?
Well, Cap, you know, we live in Chicago.
That sucks.
So those things happen. And you know what? It's still going to be great weather. The reason why is because it's not going to snow in May.
Thank God.
So we're going to be fine. There's always positives when it comes to the weather.
Saturday is going to be 69.
That's nice.
Ugh.
Meller!
That's brutal.
What about rain?
I hate over 70, man. You start at over 80. Once you get over 80, give me low 60s every day of the week.
Okay, thanks, Fred.
Okay, so... Wait. So I have my own opinion, but someone else shares that opinion, and that automatically makes me... Because let's not go down that road of people who share your opinion, and then you call them that.
Danny, rain tonight, buddy?
We'll skip over Meller and go right to Danny. Danny?
Gentlemen, thank you for sending it to me in the Meteorology Center. There will be no rain tonight, Kaplan. There will be a few p.m. storms tomorrow, Tuesday. We've got a high of 84, a low of 68. On Wednesday, showers early, high of 83, low of 54. Thursday, now this is where we take a dip. We've got 65 degrees as our high, 51 as a low. Rain storms late. They carry through the night, so we have rain early on Friday with a high of 63.
All right, good. Thanks, Danny. That's
a low of 48.
All right, thank you.
I'm doing the weather, which you asked for.
I did, but we're good. We've got plenty for that foreseeable future. We've got baseball tonight. By the way, we were talking in the IDOT bullpen a little earlier about Phil Mickelson winning at age 50. And by the way, IDOT, driving, biking, or walking responsibly really is a matter of life or death. Learn more through social media at lifeordeathillinois.com. You believe that winning at 50 today, especially in golf, is not as big a deal as it's made out to be because of training and nutrition.
No. Yeah, we're seeing Tom Brady do it at a high level when I thought that he was going to be done.
Right.
When he was done with the Patriots, I said that should be it, but he continues on because he feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Manning all the way to the end felt good. We mentioned Sue Bird earlier, who's in her 40s, that's still being able to play at a high level. It's kind of cool because what we're seeing with health and nutrition, Cap, it just shows you that no matter how old you are, if you still have a motor and still have a willing to do it, man, go on out there and do it. I never looked at Phil Mickelson and said, well, that's an old timer getting it done. That's not a senior tour player. That's Phil Mickelson.
Agreed.
He and Tiger held up golf for a long time, the battle. People liked it. There was a Magic Larry Bird element to those two battling, going back and forth. It helped the sport greatly. Yes, he's been in a drought trying to win a major, but he's still Phil Mickelson. He's still alive, right?
And he looks good. Danny said he changed the way he diets and exercises. And his brother said, I'm just telling you, he's not old Tom Morris, the guy in the 1800s. He's just not.
That's 50 in the 1800s. I mean, just old and decrepit, wearing a wool suit, trying to golf.
They golfed in suits back then.
And could you explain why?
It was a gentleman's game.
I see.
That's the way they talked about it. In fact, did you ever watch the movie with Shia LaBeouf, The Greatest Game Ever Played?
I haven't seen that.
It's an awesome movie. And in the movie, it's about Francis Ouimet, the amateur that wins the U.S. Open in like 19-0-whatever. And he beats Harry Vardon, who's like Mickelson, one of the few to win in 3 decades.
Mm-hmm.
And they play in suit and tie.
But why, though?
Because it was a gentleman's game back then.
It's a gentleman's game now. Why don't you? It's not a gentleman's game now?
Not always.
Depends on who you play with, right?
It's a little different.
Would you play in a suit today?
No.
I'd love to see that. A good full swing in the jacket?
No shot.
The old checkered jacket?
Exactly. Like the tweed jacket with the patches on the arm? No shot.
Come on, man. How much would that hinder your swing now? And a jacket that fits you, because your suits are custom fit. How would that work today?
That'd be tough.
You can get it done. Good full swing. How about on the putting? How about putting and a full suit?
Yeah, a full suit, dress shoes, the whole deal.
How about wool? Well, you, I mean, that,
yeah, on a 95-degree day.
I don't understand these people back then. Well, I mean, there, so I guess polyester was not around, right? They couldn't have something that correct felt good in the summer. So everything was wool.
All wool.
Everything you wore was wool. Wool underwear, too, right? Itchy.
Very itchy.
I mean, because otherwise, because if everything was wool, what else would you wear as undergarments back then?
Wool socks. Can you imagine how your feet itched?
It was 90-degree weather, yes, wearing wearing winter socks on the golf course. Think about that.
Brutal. Like, they're not out playing in shorts.
Did you have to have the wool cap, too? You have to have a cap while you're watching?
They all wore those little, limo driver hat.
Like the newspaper boy?
Yeah, yeah. Newsboy hat.
That's just a myth. See, this is why this old-timer looked like what he did when he was 50.
Yeah, but what was the average age of, like, your lifespan back then?
51.
Yeah, pretty close. Like, that guy was near death when he was playing.
Come on, Cap. I mean, that's why I look at Mickelson like, he doesn't look 50 to me.
No.
People always made fun of the way he looked and just like, oh, he's not in. But you know what? You can always change. And he felt like, how can I continue to be on the tour? How can I change my game? The only issue I ever had with Mickelson is just that sometimes in big moments, he would have the yips. Like, I told you before, Cap, it's hard for me to bash any golfer because I know how hard that is. It's difficult where you have to have the presence of mind to be able to get it done every time you take the course. That's hard to do. You're walking the 18 holes. And then on top of that, I don't know how I'd react, by the way. People talk about the, you know, all the crowd that was around and how they were rallying behind Phil and they're pushing him. Like, you're not going to push me, man. I'm locked in trying to make sure I finish this out so I don't screw it up again. And you're pushing me. You're not doing that.
He said it was a little, you know, he was a little nervous there, but yeah. He said it was amazingly cool to be part of that.
You can be behind me, but don't push me. You know, and then, of course, in South Carolina, not enough security to protect Phil Mickelson, the guy that's on his way to win the tournament and actually wins it. But there's not enough security. Let me get out there. There'd be plenty.
Can you imagine if Hood's out there?
And it's for me.
I said stop!
That would be enough. Like, I don't need you pushing me now. Like, you can root for me, but you can't. You're not going to be pushing me around the course.
So, one of our great listeners, Vicky McHenry.
And you either, by the way. How would you like that?
No.
I don't think, knowing you, I don't think you'd like that very much.
Getting pushed around?
Yeah.
No. But I would love to have been in that pack. That was awesome, man.
Yeah.
If I'm Phil Mickelson, I'm getting a picture of that scene of me walking with all that behind me. Oh, it was awesome.
Make me feel good again.
Vicky McHenry, who's a P1 of our show.
Yes.
She tweeted yesterday, hey, at D. Zetterman, how's that for your major? Take that. Shot. No law firm there. I'll say no more. Let your coworkers deal with you in the morning.
Oh.
And she put a screenshot out of some of the biggest names in the freaking sport all over the leaderboard yesterday.
Why don't you read my response, or you just want to paint a one-sided picture?
Before you pop off, have I finished?
I'm just asking if you're going to. I didn't know. Well, go ahead.
So
it's very important to the show.
On the picture, she has Mickelson, Koepka, Padraig Harrington's huge, Paul Casey's huge, Morikawa's the defending champ, John Rahm, who you liked going into that tournament.
I like John Rahm.
He played really well down the stretch. Danny says, hey, Vicky, doesn't this prove my point? Didn't I say that golf's only interesting when the big-name players are atop the leaderboard? I'm pretty sure that is exactly what I said. Hashtag listening is a skill.
Good job, Danny. Danny, you're firing off on Vic. Good job. Because he wanted to respond to what Vic had to say.
Like, look, there's no doubt that Phil made the amazing, amazing ratings that they'll get because sure. It was Phil Mickelson.
Sure.
All of it.
We don't get Tiger, so what's the other recognizable name?
Phil.
Right?
But if that had been Koepka against Rahm, that would still be amazing theater.
Well, sure, especially when it comes down to just a couple of shots when it's that close at 16, 17, 18, right?
The guys all that finished at the top of the leaderboard, none of them broke par yesterday. That's how hard that course was.
Let me tell you something about Brooks Koepka. I don't mind him wearing the black hat. It's sports. Someone has to wear the black hat. If you want to be unlikable or you want to be able to be, you know, cynical, that's fine. I read his comments and what he said. He says, like, the fans tried to interfere. injure Phil Mickelson, try to take the knee out, right?
No, he said they try to injure him.
Try to injure Koepka.
Yeah, didn't Koepka say, Danny, that he felt like, here you go, here is Brooks Koepka. He was in that scrum because he's in the final group.
Right. It would have been cool if I didn't have a knee injury and got dinged a few times in the knee in that crowd, because no one really gave it personally. But if I was fine, yeah, it would have been cool. You know, it's cool for Phil, but getting dinged a few times isn't exactly my idea of fun. Like, I don't mind waiting or being in that crowd, but, you know, getting my, I don't know, it felt like somebody tried to. I don't know what the deal was, but that's what it is. I'd be putting it in ice today. It feels like right now.
All right, you want to be that bad boy, that's fine. But I think people want to be able to like their golfers. Golf is different than like basketball or football to me. To me. I think that if Koepka was on the top of the leaderboard and he's winning all the time with that attitude, mm-hmm. I think that would be a turnoff for some people.
Maybe. I mean, he's such a good player to see him struggling. But
he's always got a problem. There's always an issue with him.
Right.
What's the point of that? Nobody likes that in golf.
Yeah, I would rather he had just said, yeah, I was a little nervous with my knee injury in that pack, but hey, man, it was awesome. It was Phil. It was really cool, and hats off to him, and leave it there.
Couldn't do it, though.
No.
Fans trying to hurt me.
I don't know if they were trying to hurt me on purpose. here is Phil, real quick, on the takeaway from winning the PGA.
There's no reason why, at an older age, you cannot be at your best. It just takes a little more work, and I believed it for a long time, and I wasn't getting the results, but I believed it, and I had people believe in me, and it just takes a little more work.
We've seen Tom Brady reach out to you. I was curious, anybody of note that you'd like to thank for reaching back out to you today?
So I'm very inspired by Tom Brady. He is he's actually a big motivation because of how hard he works to be the best and to elongate his career. Spending time with him, it's inspiring, but it's also, I learn a lot.
There you go. Phil Mickelson on his takeaway and what you can do at an older age. He's right.
I just, you know, and 50 doesn't feel old to me.
Correct.
2 years, I'll be 50. I don't feel old.
I don't feel old, and I'm older than that. So.
Some mornings I do feel the brunt.
Oh, it's 4 a.m. I got to get up.
That's at 4 a.m. I feel really older.
All right, shot or no shot is coming up next.
Scratch your morning sports itch.
This is Cap and Jay Hood, our new morning show.
On ESPN 1000 and the new ESPN Chicago app.
That's why I see me in my shot. No shot. With Cap and Jay Hood on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
That's why I see me in my shot.
Cap and Jay Hood, mornings between 7 and 10 on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. It is time for Shot or No Shot. We love to do this because it's either, it's or. We give you the options here as we go through some of the sports storylines. And Shot or No Shot is brought to you by
PointsBet Sportsbook at Hawthorne Racecourse. PointsBet Sportsbook now open. Download the PointsBet app right now. Stop by Hawthorne Racecourse and register your account. Don't forget, on Fridays, caller 10 can win a really cool prize package. Danny.
Morning, Danny.
Morning, Hoodie.
Hi, Danny.
Cap. Gentlemen.
All right.
Such a joke.
What do we... What?
Hi, Hoodie. How are you, buddy?
Cap. Okay. I mean...
I don't get any love back.
Okay.
I don't want to pop off.
All right. Go ahead, Danny. Whatever.
Gentlemen, shot or no shot, the PGA Championship win solidifies Phil Mickelson as the most entertaining golfer of all time.
Well, entertaining. Now, that's an interesting question. So, Rodriguez on that list? Remember him? Chi-Chi?
He was good. With the little sword. with his putter.
That was entertaining.
Lee Trevino was entertaining.
Yeah.
The Golden Bear, Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer were entertaining. Gary Player entertaining. Tiger entertaining. Yeah, I'm going to say no shot. Phil's a wildly talented golfer. He's not this charismatic, like, oh my God personality. He's just a really good player.
I wish what we saw on social media is what we see from Phil, but that's just not his personality. You have to know, and that's the issue with the tour at times. you find out through pieces, through television or social media, about the real personalities of the golfers, but not necessarily up front while the action's going on.
Yeah, I would say, again, he's an amazing player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had the longest drive, I think, on Sunday of any golfer. That was the longest course in the history of the PGA, and the 50-year-old guy found a way to win.
All right, Danny, I would say no shot to that. So would Cap.
CBS Sports did a ranking of the NFL's top 10 defenses for 2021. The Bears are not a top 10 defense, according to them. Shot or no shot, this is a slight to the beloved.
Yeah, shot. That's a slight. When you got Khalil Mack and Roquan Smith and Eddie Jackson and Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman, and you're paying huge money to Robert Quinn, he was awful in his first year, and Trevathan, yeah, that's a slight shot.
That's a no shot. It looks, the depth chart looks great. Those names are great.
Mm-hmm.
Produce. Show it. Now, we talked so much about Pagano and looking at saying, I can't send four or I can't send three in the blitz. I need more help in the secondary to try to help those being gashed over the middle. This is what Pagano told everybody,
because
right?
He didn't believe the offense could pick him up if they had a play that beat them down the field if they were blitzing.
I would like for the Bears to be able to dirty the jersey of a quarterback more than just once.
Agreed.
That's my disconnect, where I'm enamored with the names. Look at the names. Goldman's coming back too, as you mentioned. Okay, that's great. Show me they can get. I don't expect the 85 Bears. I don't even expect the Lovie Smith Bears, but I expect them to get to the quarterback. I want to see that.
Agreed.
That's got to happen.
I thought there would be a lot more pressure on the quarterback last year. Very disappointed. Now, losing Eddie Goldman was big, but there's still enough talent to get to the quarterback there.
There you go, Danny.
On Saturday, gymnast Simone Biles wore a rhinestone goat on the back of her leotard. Shot or no shot, this is arrogant.
I would say no shot, because who else is better than her in that sport? Nobody.
Nobody.
So she stands alone. So I would say no shot. I would not have a goat on the back of my leotard. And boy, wouldn't that be something.
But I asked, it's interesting. Like, what if LeBron wore a hat with a goat on it to a press conference after a game?
That would be polarizing, because it would be 50-50.
Social media would explode.
Yeah, 50-50. Yeah,
except, as you said, there is no one that rivals Simone Biles. Like, she's amazing.
No question.
And I think anyone in the sport would go, yes, she's the best. Like LeBron, there are people that say it's Michael, Kareem, Wilt, Oscar, Kobe, Magic. Like, there's a bunch. Like, I'm looking at the picture of the rhinestone goat. It's not ostentatious. It's not like, oh, my goodness.
It's not even noticeable.
No, it's very, very small. Yeah, I got no issues with it. Not.
So the size of the goat makes it okay? Because, like, let's be honest, she's sending a message. It's cool. It's interesting. It's very confident. Nothing wrong with it.
Oh, my God, she's got a goat on her back. I can't beat her. Oh, my God, the Olympics. I would say no shot to that. I think it shows some, actually, it's probably some marketing to that. Is there a goat T-shirts with Simone Biles? I'm sure that's just part of the marketing of it, too. That means money when I see that.
Like, if Tom Brady had a little goat with his TB12 logo, all right, whatever. I don't care. Yeah, I don't think it's arrogant at all. She's the best.
Well, Cap, that would be a fine in the NFL.
Yes, that's true.
He puts a little
uniform
goat.
Police would get you.
It would be the sponsor, and then like a little goat on one shoulder with TB12. Yeah, he would get a fine.
And she's also the only woman, she turned the trick over the weekend, to have a Yurchenko double pike. That's what the move is called. No one has ever accomplished that successfully except her. She's the goat.
That's crazy.
Danny.
Everyone's favorite baseball analyst, Alex Rodriguez, launched a makeup line for men over the weekend. Shot or no shot, Alex's makeup products will last until Christmas.
I would say shot. It will last through Christmas. I believe that. Look, there's men that need to have a little touch up here and there because of their Zoom calls or their appearances. Cap and I are on TV, so we put on the pancake makeup when... Actually, you don't really wear a lot of makeup, do you?
I don't. I'm not a makeup guy. I would
zero. Oh, I think you had a little bit, right?
The only thing I would usually do before TV was, because I'm bald,
yeah,
my head would shine, so I would put some stuff on they had for me.
Ethyl chloride?
No, not ethyl chloride.
That's what they Steve Stone says.
They would put some like matte stuff that would keep the glare from coming off my head. But yeah, other than that, not really.
Yeah, I need a ton on TV.
I'm not a huge makeup guy.
I gotta have that. And by the way, I'm just doing digital ESPN for the most part, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not on, unless I'm working with you on NBC Sports Chicago. Yeah, I will put that on if I need to, around the eyes, a little bit in the gills. But yeah, not a ton, but I do need some.
Yeah, I mean, buying A-Rod's.
Look at this face. There's a face for radio. You want to make sure that it has that that milk dud clean look.
Nice and well shaven.
Right, exactly.
Danny.
So I think that works. Danny, I think so. I think some men need that from time to time.
I think that product will be gone by July.
Why?
Nobody's buying Alex Rodriguez's men makeup products. I'm sorry. If you're on TV, it's different. I understand you two talking about TV.
Yeah.
But if Mellor cut himself shaving, or he had a zit and he came in today with makeup, we would mock him for a week.
Would you know?
Yeah, he's got makeup on.
Well, I mean, if he just puts it on one little spot, and if you told me his whole face is made up, yes.
How many men are, listen, it takes a level of vanity to put makeup on a zit. How many men are that vain that they would cover up a zit with makeup? Back in my dating days, if I had a zit and I put makeup on to go with a girl, I would be humiliated that she would be like, is this dude wearing makeup? You have to be Alex Rodriguez, a guy that gets pictures of himself painted as half horse, to put on makeup.
I'd be curious for, listen, people who do not work in television, like, take those folks out of it.
Okay.
Do more than 1% of men wear makeup? I would bet no.
I would agree with you.
If you don't work in TV, I could be wrong, but I'd be curious.
Well, I know some men that wear makeup.
But would they put...
In some areas of this city.
But they want you to know they're wearing makeup. That's a different conversation. Like, it's fine if a man wants to put on makeup and that's his thing, that's cool.
Yeah.
But A-Rod's makeup is the subtle makeup, the one that you don't know is on to cover up an imperfection.
But wouldn't you think that they would have done focus groups, a study, before they put all this money into developing, marketing, signing a deal with A-Rod? Like, that's not cheap. There's millions of dollars at stake here. They got to know what they're doing.
And by the way, hold on a second. Just want to make sure it's clear. I'm looking at this, Danny, and it doesn't say have A-Rod's name. It's Hims, right? Is that a Hims brand?
I think it's A-Rod brand. Everything I read is that it's an A-Rod brand maker.
Is it like Alex on the front of the, you know, the lipstick or the whatever that you, the bronzer or whatever?
Gloss, more of a gloss.
The gloss? Yeah, just
like
I guess,
a chapstick.
He's teaming up with Hims and Hers to develop the first stab into men's makeup. I want to create a product. This is his quote. Quote, I want to create a product that solves an issue I face every day. I realized as I was jumping from meeting to meeting, I needed something quick and easy in my routine to conceal blemishes and razor bumps.
Mm. Well, here's how I look at it. Because it's A-Rod, I would not be interested. Right? Because it's A-Rod.
Because he's unlikable.
Yes.
I think he should endorse his own line of, like, HGH. I would buy that.
Well, we all should be on HGH.
That's more up his alley.
We all actually should be on HGH.
Amen to that.
Right?
Right. Is it legal? Can you just go buy HGH?
You need a prescription from a doctor.
From a doctor.
Danny, take care of that for us.
I'm trying to get some for myself.
We all need... you would agree all of us should probably
After
be on
After the
it.
Age of 35, every man needs HGH, yes.
All right. What else? Go ahead.
George is at it again. He responds with a letter. That's next.
Cap, J Hood.
Our new morning show.
Follow on Instagram at Cap J Hood.
This is ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Hi there, and welcome to Letters with George. I'm your host, George, and Ryan and Matt are our football guys. Just want you to know that we get letters from far and wide asking questions about our Chicago Bears, like this one. Frank in Gary, Indiana, says, Dear George, what the hell is going on with this team? How can you allow Tony La Russa to continue to manage the team? Put this old fart out of his misery. Old school baseball is shitty. What were you thinking? Signed, Frank and Gary, Indiana. Oh, my stars. Dear Rick Hahn, I think this is for you. Signed, George. Ha ha. Well, we'll fold this up. Fold this up, lick it, and send it off to the courier. Thanks so much, and go Bears!
It's an amazing thing to get that exclusive content where the owner, George, gives us just thoughts and things he has to deal with on a day-to-day basis.
Friendly fire George is getting. Now he's getting letters. I suppose he's going to Rick Hahn.
Dear Rick, I think this is for you.
That's what he said. So that, yeah, that happens, you know. Friendly fire.
A little slobbery on the licking of the envelope.
Well, I'm not here to judge his slobbering. I'm here to judge his wins and losses. And I'm here to tell you that, you know, Bears fans, they're ready for the season. They could get confused on our teams.
They do. 100%.
Blaming George for La Russa.
100%. Don't forget, we have baseball tonight at 6:30. Our pregame coverage starts. Cardinals at White Sox.
The Cardinals limping in after losing against the Cubs 2 out of 3. Is Shannon still open, by the way, in St. Louis?
I believe that there's one location still, but the main one by the ballpark, I think, is gone.
Not both, huh?
You know what? I'll tell you right now.
No, I really don't. I don't need to know. I'm just like.
Have you ever eaten there?
Yeah, unfortunately. I've hurled there, too.
You've what?
Hurled there, too. That's another way to throwing up.
Yes. Yeah, I'm aware. Yeah. Why?
Blue chunks, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Not the best place. Didn't have a great experience there.
Huh. I thought maybe it was too much crown.
No. It just that toasted ravioli and that and a 95 degree day, that doesn't mix in the daytime.
Okay, so he still has Mike Shannon's at Lambert International Airport.
Steve Reich 0-1.
That opens at 10 a.m.
Top of the first year's John.
Mike Shannon's Grill in Edwardsville, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Right down there. I believe the downtown restaurant closed a few years ago. Yes, it is closed.
That's the one I went to. Yeah, nothing like that toasted ravioli on a 100-degree day in St. Louis during the daytime when you're trying to go drinking.
That is their, like, staple. Like, if Chicago, what are you known for? Great steaks,
mm-hmm.
deep dish pizza, Garrett popcorn. I mean, just all sorts of cool stuff.
Doggone right.
St. Louis, toasted ravioli. Really? Really?
And I don't mind St. Louis. I just don't mind that as a delicacy, right?
Like, that's what you're known for.
Right. That doesn't great at Shannon's, the one I had downtown. But, hey, you know what? You try to find – you're looking for a good steak there. You can find some good places there. Sure.
Sure.
Franklin Walensky, want to say? In downtown somewhere near? It's nice.
Yeah, there's a place called Charlie Gito's down mm-hmm. there. Very good place. Very good food.
So if you go to Guaranteed Rate and you see a bunch of fans with sandals and white socks, you know.
Cardinals are in town.
And the white belts.
And I believe today is the day that it goes to 60% capacity.
Yeah. And a beautiful night, by the way.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So it's going to be fun.
I will be there. Looking forward to it. As I said, it's my late mom's birthday today.
Mm-hmm.
She would have been 88 today. So my wife and I are going to be at the game. We're going to grab a little dinner and we're going to toast. So
yeah,
it'll be fun. And hopefully the White Sox can find a way to win a baseball game.
Oh, my God. Please.
All right. We'll crosstalk with Carmen and Yurko. 2 minutes.